Salut, moi c'est Jérôme Vermelin et vous écoutez Les gens qui lisent sont plus heureux. Et si, à l'heure où les réseaux sociaux vampirisent nos cerveaux, prendre le temps d'ouvrir un livre était devenu un acte de résistance? Ce podcast, c'est celui des passionnés de lecture, sous toutes ses formes, sans préjugés. Dans cet épisode, mon invité est une superstar de l'édition, le Suédois David Lagercrantz.
Good books develops your empathy. It makes you see that we are all alike. You can see that people struggle with the same thing, like you. And I also think people who are wiser could be happier.
La première fois que j'ai entendu parler de David Lagercrantz, c'était pour sa biographie de son compatriote, le célèbre footballeur Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Un immense succès qui va attirer l'attention sur lui. En 2013, ce journaliste spécialiste des affaires criminelles se voit confier la lourde tâche de succéder au regretté Stieg Larsson, le créateur de la saga policière Millennium. Sous sa plume, le journaliste d'investigation Mikael Blomqvist et la sulfureuse Lisbeth Salander vivent de nouvelles aventures qui puisent leurs intrigues dans les maux de notre époque. L'intégrisme religieux, la montée des populismes à travers l'Europe ou encore la cybercriminalité. Après Ce qui ne me tue pas et La fille qui rendait coup pour coup, David Lagercrantz a publié à la rentrée La fille qui devait mourir, un sixième tome de Millennium qui sera pour lui le dernier. De passage à Paris, il m'a accordé cet entretien passionnant que je vous propose d'écouter en anglais avec un délicieux accent suédois. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Pleasure.
It's a great to have you on my show. Les gens qui lisent sont plus heureux. People who read books are happier. I will ask you about that later. But I want to start with the last question. Mm-hmm. I want to know if the Millennium story is over for you or not with that sixth book.
It's certainly over. I'm absolutely sure.
Is it true? That.
It is true. It's been sort of the thrill of my life. And it's been such a pressure and a pleasure. But I need to move on. Because, you know, there is actually something called you can be corrupted of success. Mm-hmm. You're writing a series that people read, and then you're just continuing and get more tired and more tired. So I'm an old reporter. I need new challenges. So I just felt, this is enough. Now I will do something else.
So you're ready to give it to somebody else if they want to?
I mean, Lisbeth Salander, yes. I mean, I hope she will live. And I know she will live. She's too good to die. So, but I don't know what will happen to her. I have this feeling that for the moment she lives between the books. You see what I mean? You know, action heroes and heroes are book. They have, especially in the fiction, crime fiction literature, their life is such a drama, but they can't have that all the time. So now I'm thinking about Lisbeth, that she is between books. She's having a break. So maybe she has some peace in her mind.
Do you think the Lisbeth Salander phenomenon went further than you expected and further than Stieg Larsson expected?
Of course, of course. I mean, he was an unknown journalist. I mean, he couldn't even dreamed about that, I'm sure. So I always, I many times daydreaming, you know, waking him up and telling him, gosh, you know what happened? Your character is such an icon. And I was surprised too. I mean, how people reacted to her and what an icon she was and how she engaged people.
We both agree that she became bigger than Blomqvist, right?
Of course, of course.
He's a nice guy. He's a great
he's
character.
He's a nice guy, but he's, I mean, if Lisbeth is Sherlock Holmes, I mean, Michael Blomqvist is Dr. Watson. She's the extreme interesting character. And he's
they need
more,
each other, right?
They need each other. And I think every extreme character needs a normal person that you see her or him through. So they need each other. But it's become, in the States and the England, it's the Lisbeth Salander books.
In Sweden too, right?
No? Yeah, in Sweden too, yes, yes. But not as much.
Can we roll back time a little bit?
Yes, of
when
course.
When you were offered this sort of job. I think it's it's also a job.
Yes, it is.
It's an art and it's a job at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Were you a little bit reluctant at first, or were you just so happy that they offered it to you that you said, well, I'll take it and I'll see what happens?
Shall I tell a story shortly?
Shortly, please.
Yes. The short story is that I wrote the book about Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I remember.
And that was actually the fastest selling book ever in Sweden. So it was a huge success. And I was telling my agent that it was a crazy thing for me to do, but it was a good thing to go into a head of a person that are my absolutely opposite. So I said, sometimes I feel that I'm best as an actor writer, you know, going into other roles that I wouldn't have created or think of myself. And then I saw my agent's eye go like, oh, and then she started to speak to certain people, to the publisher at Norstedts Publishing House. And suddenly I got a call. And then I belonged to the competitive publishing house. So I got a very strange call. They said that they want to see me, but they don't want me to go into the main entrance.
Mm-hmm.
They said that I would go down into the basement. And I thought that was really funny. So they led me in to a little room without any window. And then Eva Jedin, Stig Larsson's old publisher, leaned over and asked me quite solemnly, do you consider writing the first book in the Millennium series? And you know how long I hesitated?
1-2 seconds?
A microsecond. I screamed, yes. And I still don't know why, but maybe I just felt the fever. Maybe I was like a journalist in front of a scoop.
And you were a fan, right?
I were a fan. I was certainly a fan. But I also saw the challenge. Mm-hmm. What a thing to do. I mean, we haven't done anything like that in Sweden before. You know, continuing a book, especially a book that was such a success. So in the beginning, it was just fever and passion. But then after a while, of course, I was scared to death.
You were also aware of the controversy, right? Right?
Yes.
Between the fight between the wife of Stig Larsson and the family. Were you afraid of that? Were you afraid of, you know, going to ground that was shaky in some way?
Not in the beginning. In the beginning, I was just like, thinking, I will do it and find a story. But then we went public, you know, that I'm going to do it. And Sweden went absolutely crazy. And then I certainly became aware of it. And it's, I'm still so sad that they haven't reached an agreement of the rights. I mean, that's the sad thing about it. But it's something with this character and with Stig Larsson that, you know, get people's emotion to sort of flush forward. So it was really pressure.
But at the same time, you have to do the job, right? And you have to get yourself in a room and take away all the pressure and the controversy and write the book, right?
Yeah, but I have to. I mean, it was a job. It was a contract and something that I had to do. But I couldn't just consider it as a job because it was so important. I mean, I couldn't destroy the books and write something like this. So it was really a passion for me. And I also felt if I would write bad books, you know, I would ruin my authorship.
Sure.
Yeah, so, oh God, I was scared to death, but being scared is a good driving force.
Was it a three-book contract, and did you have the idea for the three books at the beginning?
No, it was just a one-book contract because I think everyone was scared. What is going to happen? Are people going to care? Are people going to buy it? Or what's going to happen? I had this strange month where I was just walking around, wondering what to do. But then after, you know, all the scandals and all the angry press, the book sort of skyrocket, you know, up to the bestseller list, and we'd got great reviews. And then they asked me, would you like to write 4, 5, 6, and 7? But I said, I'll write 3. He wrote 3, and I write 3.
That was your decision?
That was my decision, yes. And my publisher, I think that was a good idea too.
I think you made it your own along the way.
Yes.
In the way you write the story and you write short chapters.
Yes.
I think it really happened with the previous one. It's this one is a continuation.
Yes, yes.
At first, did you want to write like Stieg Larsson? And at some point, did you just want to write like David Lagercrantz?
Yeah, you can say that. I mean, from the beginning, I wanted to be both Stieg Larsson, both be trustful and add something. But the first book, I was, as I said, scared, you know, and I was thinking about what would Stieg Larsson have done. And I also had a sense that he wrote such a thick books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a master, but maybe they were a little too thick. So, but I wouldn't dare to take away everything because I wanted my book to be thick. I mean, I couldn't have a book looking like a collective of poetry, you know, or something. So, but after a while, I put more and more in myself in it. And I cut away more and more to make it, you know, faster.
The news is carrying stories all the time that can be used in the Millennium books, right?
Yeah.
Stieg Larsson was a journalist. He was writing on tough, hard stories. You were a journalist too.
Yes.
Would you say that you had plenty of subjects to choose from before? Talking about internet trolls, which are at the beginning of the story, did you search for? Well, did you have to go through all the news stories to find your story?
Yes, I mean I was thinking about it because every book should deal with some social issue, contemporary issue. But first of all, I was thinking about the story. I mean, this book is the final battle between the sisters, Camilla and, but. I'm a member of PEN, you know, PEN International.
Mm-hmm.
So I really thought that we were living in dangerous time, that free speech are under threat. And I saw that organized forces are using disinformation, fake news to polarize people and spreading hate and spreading hate is dangerous. I mean, demonizing people is dangerous. I mean, demonizing people is close to violence. So I really saw this dangerous world where these populist right-wing leaders attacking democracy and using fake news and disinformation, conspiracy theories. So that was a quite obvious thing, I would say.
It's something that didn't exist when Larsson was writing books, right?
No, it wasn't.
It's something that spread very, very, very fast.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes, I think, I mean, they realized, I mean, certain states realized that, you know, especially during the refugee crisis, that the society are getting polarized and they saw an opportunity to spread us apart. To get groups to demonize and to weaken democracy. I mean, we know that now for sure. They I mean, the Russian actually had influence in the American election, and that's such a crazy thing.
Some people believe in France they had an influence too.
Yeah.
In Sweden also? In Sweden, I mean, politics
we
also?
We know they have, because we now have evidence that they've given money to certain websites, both locally and globally. And we know that that's part of the attack of the liberal democracy to demonize Sweden. So when I speak to journalists, especially in Eastern Europe, they have this picture of Sweden as a country sort of in war,
mm-hmm,
with
mm-hmm.
refugees destroying it with bombs and cars burning all over. So we know that they are demonizing Sweden because, you know, they wanted to show a picture that refugees had destroyed our country. So, and it's dangerous, and it's dangerous.
And Lisbeth seems like the only hero who can save us from internet trolls.
Yeah, I mean, she's a superhero in one way and a real woman in one way.
In a real woman.
Another way, yes. So, yes. But first of all, she always had this. She's not really a political figure. Michael Blomqvist is more. She's more a personal revenger.
He's left wing.
Sorry?
He's left wing.
Yeah, he's left wing, and we don't know really what Lisbeth Salander is, but what we know that is she's a feminist icon. She's fighting. I mean, her first trauma that created her was when she saw the violence against her mother, and she saw that society didn't do anything, and she understood that she had to, take revenge herself. That really was the moment that created her.
Do you think fiction is more reliable than the news these days? And in some ways, if you want to know about the world, it's better to read a Millennium book than the news websites.
It certainly depends what websites we are talking about.
Yeah.
So there are certain websites, I would say, that reading any book is better than going to these websites. But I think the good thing that is happening now when we have this crisis in the world is that it's also a reborn of good journalism. I mean, we see that, I don't know really how the situation is in France, but we see that in UK, in Sweden, in US. We see Washington Post, New York Times, The Guardian, and papers, they're really making good journalism. They are striking back, and people are starting to get interested, and they're really paying it off. They are starving for truth. They are starving for something reliable, and we have very good public service in Sweden, both radio and TV. So it depends what website we're talking about. But good fiction is always a good source to seek truth about human soul.
When you work on a Millennium book, you work like a journalist in many ways. What kind of research did you do for this one? What did you want to learn? And what did you learn?
I always try. I'm interested in science. I learn about DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of research, and I also learned that if we go back 40,000 years ago, Homo sapiens, we were actually mating and having kids with other species of humans, Neanderthals and Denisovan. And some of our genes actually come from that. They were liberal back then, you know. And so I learned that certain people living high up in the mountain, they have a gene from Denisovan that makes them suitable to live on high altitude. So I learned a lot about science, and I love to educate. I love to read books when I'm not only entertained.
It's important for you, right?
It's important to me, and I love to teach something, or when I read, to learn something, to be a little bit wiser, or as best see the world a little in different ways. I think literature is good. You should always test your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Test your opinions. I mean, many people are so sure that they think this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But literature can make you doubt, and it's important to doubt.
So do you think people who read books are happier than others?
I think they are definitely wiser. And I think we see in politics, if we go to the crazy, populist movements, there are certainly people who don't read good books. Because good books develops your empathy. It makes you see that we are all alike. You can see that people struggle with the same thing like you. And I also think people who are wiser could be happier. I could have this feeling with myself. I have times, I'm sad to say, when I'm on tour and writing, that when I'm not reading so much book as I otherwise do, and then I'm not as happy.
Really?
I miss something in my life. Mm-hmm. It gives me some calmness in reading. And reading something really good. It's such a pleasure.
When you were a kid, did your parents teach you about books? Did they give you the love of books, or did you do it by yourself?
I don't know if you know about my family, but my family is very famous in Sweden. My father was this highbrow intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
So he was writing biographies of Dante and James Joyce and Marcel Proust, and he was the chief editor of our leading paper and a literary critic. So maybe he gave me, you know, two tough books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of rebel, and I didn't read.
That's what happens sometimes with, yes, with kids and their parents.
Yes, I didn't read it all. I was into sports, but then something interesting happens. I remember trying to find my own books, and I found Mario Puzo's The Godfather, who was new then when I was a kid. And on page 24, I actually read my first sex scene. You know, Sonny Corleone, mm-hmm, with, mm-hmm, his lover at the wedding. And then I find out, wow, literature could be something. So I think it have to start not with, you know, the grown-up saying it's good to read. It has to start with an urge in front of you, inside yourself. And then I starting to read other books and you know.
And the idea to write your own book, your own books, did that happen very naturally?
Well, I sort of idolized in one way my father, and we had this home with writers. I mean, we're writers.
At home, all the time,
all the famous writers. So I sort of, I think I wanted to be a writer, mm-hmm, before I wanted to write, if you see what I mean. I wanted to look like them, you know.
You have to tell me a story about your childhood. You have to tell me about a famous writer that you met when you were a kid. I'm sure you did.
Yes, I met a lot, but there are, I mean, all this famous Swedish writer, mm-hmm, and my father also met, I mean, all the international writer. We lived that summer at Laxness, you know, the Nobel Prize winner. Mm-hmm. We lived at his home in the summer in Reykjavik, and he lived with us. But it was a strange way of because we had so many important people coming to our house. You know, there were. They could even be in the government and so.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, look really fancy. And my father just said, they are mediocre. They are just stupid guys. And then I could see this alcoholic, you know, guy. I know, why is he here at home just sitting drooling like this? And my father went, oh, worship him, because this was, you know, a famous poet.
Okay.
So that was, mm-hmm, that was a strange way of my father didn't care about titles. He cared about talents and
and style also.
And style. Yeah, right.
The writer needs to have style.
Need to have styles. Some haven't, but they're good anyway.
So that was the way you were taught books when you were a kid. Today, when you meet people who don't read books or who don't like books, that happens many times. You're a writer.
Of course.
You're in a taxi somewhere in the world, and they tell you, "Oh, you write books." Me, I don't read. I don't have the time. What do you say to them?
I always say they should try, but I'm so lucky. So I've actually written the book that people who don't read have read.
That's the
crazy thing. The book about Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the great thing. I mean, first we didn't understand how a book could sell so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it sold in Sweden 500 hard copies in a month. That's crazy. But the reason was that people who had never been near a bookstore or a library actually read it, because Zlatan was so iconic, and maybe the good was good as well. So I'm proud of that this book that actually made people who didn't read start to read.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some people just read this book. So I just said, I can say, even if it's a little selfish, you know, if you don't read, you can start with this. Many do this.
And then the Millennium Book.
So I'm fortunate. But I don't know. I mean, you should say to people that without books is the way into society. Books is the way to grow. Books, it's a way to understand other people. Book is the way to understand that you can see yourself in what you think is absolutely different. Books develop your language and your thoughts. And books actually get you more witty. You will be more a witty, person at a party if you have read books. You have more lines, So I can sense that immediately when I speak to a person, but this one is not a reader.
What do you read these days?
I read all the time. The last book I read was has just come out. It's called The Secrets We Kept. And that was actually brilliant. And it's about how they smuggled out Dr. Zhivago from the Soviet Union because it was forbidden. And Dr. Zhivago, actually, there was the intelligence because they used it as a weapon, you know. They were not just, you know, hard power and nuclear weapons. They were also soft powers. So the West really had used that weapon and wanted to show how cruel must a country be who forbid a book like this. So this is a story about Pasternak and the story about the ladies who you know, smuggled the book out. It's a beautiful sort of a spy novel biography. So that was the last one. And then I read, as all the word, I think, read Tara Westover's Education. I don't know. I've read so many, but I just have summer leave. And then I read, a couple of books a week.
And when you travel for the promotion of the book, of your book, do you bring some books with
yes,
you?
Yes, always, always. I read on the plane.
Not on a Kindle.
I'm old fashioned.
I'm old fashioned too.
But I feel the threat of my phone. I feel it, and I'm quite sad about it because I've realized that I don't read. I read smaller parts now, because as everyone, I got into addicted.
It's funny you mentioned that because that's one of the reasons for creating this podcast. Yeah. Is that myself? I was reading all the time. Yes. I was reading on my phone. I was reading short stories, short controversies. I was, reacting to things, but I was not following a sentence or even a story, and I missed the time that I was usually using for books. And I think reading books stops the time. And to actually read, you have to take away your phone.
You have to take away your phone.
Because it's too addictive.
I think it's important. I think sometimes if I bring back whatever, my father or any person who died 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and brought them back to our time, they were thought we were hypnotized of these small things, items. Because if you see it, it's normalized now. Because we see people all over. But if we just, went from history and back, and we see all these people walking like this, what is happening? Are they, have this some power on us?
It's funny because when we were younger, we were reading in the science fiction books from Philip K. Dick or Asimov.
Yeah, all of them.
In those books, there was always flying cars.
Yes, yes.
But actually,
it didn't
happen
make
yet.
Any flying cars.
But smart mobile phones didn't exist in Blade Runner, for instance. There's no mobile phone, right?
No. We have never have been able to see the future. I even remember in the first Harry Potter, Hermione. Is reading all the books to try this formula, this magic formula. And I heard of this father who had his daughter read a book, and she has to ask, but why didn't she Google it? So even J.K. Rowling in this magic word couldn't imagine Google.
Exactly. What does the future looks like for you? What are you working on right now?
I've signed a new 3-book contract. And I will stay in the genre. I think I've learned the genre now, the writing. So I have this new series I'm quite thrilled about. I will flirt a little bit with Sherlock Holmes. So I have this guy from the upper class, who is brilliant but weak and have depressions like me. And I have this girl from the ghetto, sort of, you know, all everything that I learned from Zlatan. And she's tough and street smart, and they will interact. So I'm into that. So I will stay in the genre, but I'm now will maybe deal with my own demons and write about figures that are more like me. I love Lisbeth and I love Mikael, but they were a little more too much stable for me. Now I want more neurotic.
So it will be set in Sweden.
It will be set in Sweden. Yeah. It will be set in Stockholm. Yes.
And then, have you finished?
No. I've started, but I have the plot and I have sort of the tone of it. So maybe I shouldn't speak so much about it because it's bad luck to speak about the book you haven't written.
I agree with you. Yeah, you should keep it for yourself.
I agree. But in book business, you sign contracts before you have written it. So I have to speak about it too.
We have talked about it, but if somebody else was to write a million books in the future, first of all, would you be consulted, and do you have any idea about who could do the job?
I have no idea. I mean, I hope I will be consulted, but I hope whoever will do it will you know dare to put her. Maybe it would be a woman. That would be a good thing to put herself in it. And I think, like all superheroes, they should change over time. So I looking forward to see her involved.
Women, it's true that women write fantastic crime novels.
Yes, they do.
Of course, Camilla Läckberg, but yes, many others, right?
Yes. Yeah, but I would also like, not genre. I think that would be a good... I mean, I was not into the crime fiction genre. I think it's good to take an author from the more serious field. I think that would be fun, both for the books and for the authors.
And does it have to be a Swedish person?
No, it doesn't have to, but it have to be a person who sort of understands Swedish and understands the core of feminism and values. Because when Hollywood tried, they didn't really get it. They didn't really get the soul of the book. So you have to understand.
It's funny you mentioned that, because when I met you the last time, it was just before Claire Foy was chosen for the last movie.
Yes.
Which didn't do too well.
No, it didn't. It was. I mean, she was great. She was really great. She was maybe the best Lisbeth, but the film was terrible, I must say. And it didn't.
You were
really
disappointed.
I was terribly disappointed. Now I don't care because it wasn't my book. It wasn't my book at all. It was something else.
It was based on your book, on the first book, really. Right?
Yeah, it had the same title as my book, but it wasn't really my book. But I think they didn't understand the books, and I'm not sure that they really even tried to understand them. They want to just make it an action thriller. So...
I think Noomi Rapace was the
best. Maybe she was. Yeah, she was great. She was great. Absolutely, she was great. So I hope that we will. You know, we are fighting to have it be made in Scandinavia.
That's what I was. Thinking. It's
always complicated with the rights, but for the moment, I don't think Hollywood deserve the rights because they, they didn't try.
But the Americans have the
rights. But it's complicated. They have the rights, so it's complicated. It's complicated.
So maybe they have to write new stories in Sweden and adapt them.
Yes. But it's interesting. If you want to write, if you want to be commercial, if you're too commercial, you will not even be commercial. You always have to have some heart in it. And that's, I think, is important for these books. Whatever do it, must do it with passion.
And it's true that those books, when Stieg Larsson first wrote them, they didn't look commercial just because of the fact that they were big books.
No. And they were quite slow in the starts. Mm-hmm. And it took a while. And then suddenly it skyrocketed like crazy.
So the lesson that we learn from that is that you have to follow your heart.
You must not have a passion. Not a formula, you must have a right? passion. I mean, you can learn the techniques of writing a page turner. Mm-hmm. You can do that, but you must also have something else.
Okay, thank you very much, David.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. For your time. Thank you.
And I hope we can talk about your next saga.
Yeah, hope so too.
In the future. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
C'est la fin de ce podcast. Merci de l'avoir suivi. Je vous dis à bientôt pour un nouvel épisode des gens qui lisent sont plus heureux.